Great. Thank you so much. Hey, everybody. Wow. Hey, how you doing? Gosh, it's like two totally separate things going on here. Y'all can't see each other. Thanks for having me, Joan. Thanks for organizing this. And since Adam read some work poems, I'm just going to start with a work poem. I cleaned houses for a while. That's what I did with my English degree. So stay in school. And except major in something like engineering, maybe. If you had told me that like 20 years later I'd be writing poems about this experience, I would have chuckled. This is called The Math. Bob has two girlfriends that we know about. They arrive unannounced when Bob's not around. Bob needs our help, he says, organizing. Bob's Fremont penthouse is being joined to the one next door. Mo calls this job security, the constant construction dust, glitter of drywall, so fine, it bites us all. We're just two among many helping Bob. Mo tells me once she saw his pay stub. $18,000 for 2 weeks. Do the math. That was in 1995. So, and he was in Marina Insurance. So if you youngsters out there, just that's your tip for tonight. Okay. So I don't really like it when people are motivated by the following half of a sentence, because it's an election year. But because it's an election year, I am going to read this poem. Also, I think Tom likes this one. So it's called Denver to Tulsa. I don't fly unless there's a good-looking girl on the other side. A good-looking girl rocking her Stetson and her internship at Tulsa Studies for Women's Lit, foremost feminist journal, smack in the buckle of the Bible Belt. I don't fly unless the risk of fiery death is offset by the chance I might be saved. So when the pilot gets on and says, her name is Susan, and she'll be my captain today, this should sound promising, an appropriately hot radical send-off into the brazen arms of my lover. But I and 89 Republicans, fellow travelers, we all look up, startled, and grip the armrests a little more dearly, tighten our seatbelts, hope no one noticed. She'll go unnamed, but a former therapist of mine walked in earlier, and so I had to change the entire lineup of my reading. And actually, a couple of you who are in the room are in this one. You'll recognize yourselves, hopefully. This is called System of Hideouts, and it starts with an epigraph from Rabbi Martin Buber in his book, The Way of Man, which is a beautiful meditation. And the quote is, to escape responsibility for his life, he turns existence into a system of hideouts. To avoid writing poems, I go to therapy, where she rubs her hands together and exclaims, I love emptiness. Do you know why? The question is not rhetorical. I mumble thinly, no, why? She can't wait to tell me, because only in emptiness are poems born. To avoid writing poems, I worked at Whole Foods, where Morgan, moon-faced and flip, asked me, so Heather, how's the writing? Here's a tip. Never ask a writer about her writing unless you want a nice fat lip. 3 years later, my mother in the car inquired, are your poems less angry than they used to be? To avoid writing poems, I went to the grocery store and found a new girlfriend in the cookie aisle. We bought toothbrushes and fled the state. There are naturally less extreme tactics. 6 feet under, taekwondo, pizza, ice cream, the internet, alcohol, home remodeling and library school, The Wire, The West Wing, a dozen or so prerequisites toward a career in chiropractic. But romance and state hopping, preferably together, guzzle half decades and nothing to show. When you look down 5 years later, maybe you're pulling on your socks, blue and yellow argyles, and it occurs to you, these aren't even my socks. These are my ex-girlfriend's ex-boyfriend's socks. Nothing I own is mine. And anyway, I hate Seattle. How on earth did I get here? And how the fuck do I get back? The question that will linger like a tapeworm is, how many poems and books of poems might I have written instead? To avoid writing poems, I, is Wednesday's workshop prompt, and the one we all call Swatson coolly affirms avoidance? It's a lifestyle. The class agrees it's why they smoke, why not to live alone. Meanwhile, I take my fist, bang my sternum, and explain, poems live here. How every day the choice remains, cleave to aisle number 7's collarbones or to the poem, boneless and real. Jay, there's a short one in here that I think I remember you liking, so this one's for Jay. And at night you can count your money. Resist joy until your back is bloody, until the wall behind you has blood on it. Remember, joy is just a switch God throws, on, off, a heat-sensing beam on snow. God's plan for you may in fact be the thing you do each day, in which case, keep driving. Don't unpack. At night, curl up with your calculator. Add everything together, divide, continue until you feel better. Toward sleep, say this prayer. How much? For how long? How much longer? All right, now I'm going to read some poems. Now, I'm kind of enjoying my newer stuff lately. It's called The Outsiders, which actually isn't that new now that I think of it. And The Outsiders, some of you may recall, is that great novel by S.C. Hinton, but it was also a movie in 83. And the reason I know it was in 83 is I'm binge-watching The Americans, which takes place in 83, and there was a movie poster today, and it said The Outsiders, so I knew I was on the right track reading this. I am in fourth grade, and it is my brownie troop Halloween party. I have painstakingly combed Johnson baby oil, a cup of it, into my obstinate root system of this frizzy blonde hair. This will not be one of the worst mistakes in human history until bedtime. I have a photo from this night. In it, I am in the living room of our Elgin Street apartment with my Exxon Valdez spill of a mane and a Minnie Mouse muscle shirt. Already at 9, I am a little in love, if not exactly aware of the irony here. Two-Bit, played by Emilio Estevez, wears a Mickey Mouse tee, you see. We are the same person, which is what I've been my whole life trying to tell you. At the Brownie Halloween party at Fulton School, I am not the only greaser. Christy D'Angelo has swiped my thunder. In a few years, Christy and I will play house, which involves me straddling her big belly and pretending to beat the shit out of her while her little brother Anthony watches. In the background chirps the Brady Bunch. You really can't make this shit up. Anyway, Christy, fat, bullied, tragic. And yet here among the strawberry shortcakes and Smurfs, she swaggers, her swarthy Italian duck's tail rivaling Ralph Macchio's, her oversized leather and Levi's bear a tough butch broad I do not want to fuck with. She summons, one dense finger, come here. It is not cool at all that my identity has been co-opted by fat Christy D'Angelo. Her toughies swapped tonight for the same black Converse under my own rolled cuffs. For this coincidence, I don't feel one bit less alone in the world. I like being alone in the world. I come here. But, she challenges, do you have one of these? From her denim back pocket, she pulls what I know from my S.C. Hinton immersion training is an honest-to-God switchblade. Black plastic casing, indestructible, a slender, intimate gun. She opens it, slow and sudden, and now its reality is as long as a child's arm, the blade shiny enough to do your hair in. I shake my head, staring. I don't have one of those. I have the dull, stubborn pocket knife I stole from my grandma's junk drawer last week under the shrill eye of her parakeet, Bobo, and which I will put back while grandma's in the bath because the guilt is keeping me up nights. No, I say, still shaking my head. I sure don't. No knife, no balls, no penis. You better believe this is about the body. I have a Minnie Mouse t-shirt, not even Mickey, its collar now dark and sopping with baby oil underneath the already unbearable chest. I have a copy of The Outsiders, pruned and coverless from when it fell in the tub. I have identical Laurel editions of Rumblefish, That Was Then, This Is Now, and Tex, which I would rather read than breathe, or eat, or even sing along to The Police, Synchronicity, my first favorite thing to do. I have even less than Christy, who doesn't have a penis either, but is at least armed. Rivals forever now, we do as men do, slouch to opposite corners of the brownie Halloween party, two butch baby dykes trying it on. This is maybe the last poem I wrote, I don't know. It's called Stoli Madras. Anybody drinking Stoli Madras tonight? Well, you're going to get the recipe, so. It's Stoli with OJ and orange juice and some lime. Madison calls. She's coming over. She's bringing OJ, cranberry, lime, a liter of Stoli. Not Stoli vanilla, not Stoli fucking espresso bean, Stoli, period. Since you crashed into each other fall semester, she has asserted the virtues of the Stoli Madras, but has yet to punctuate Stoli with anything but itself. She is the smartest, meanest woman you've ever touched. Stoli on her tongue is a tire iron barbed in broken glass. It's Sunday, noon when she calls. McNar, it's Stoli Madras Day. We can get sober tomorrow. Some days are a dog you want to put down. Last night waves back as through a windshield in a storm. The midnight Papa John's delivery, the Johnson City driver, whom over the phone you take turns abusing. After 2 days of Beck's and Camel's, the pizza is a raw steak between strays. You dig in. Then, from some conjurer's exhaust, the suspicion, the delivery guy, did something to your pie in revenge. Here, reality bends. Each bite, the poison or ejaculate or whatever, you deserve it. Of course you do. Two drunk bitches, drunk rich bitches with your feminism and your fellowships, unmanning a townie in a Hyundai. But among the things you can't stop is this pizza. Slice after slice, driving two incompatible ideas, regret, and you can't remember the other. You are on the dark street between Saturday and Sunday on which the bargaining begins. This is the last time, I swear, the last beer, the last. Madison's nose is bleeding again. Soon you will ask her to leave, an ordeal that takes up the staircase and most of the rest of the night. She will play the rape card. I can't be alone. I'm having a flashback. This worked the first half dozen times, but now you prioritize. Elliot Smith understands. He's upstairs, chain smoking, devolving, saving your seat on the mattress by the milk crates and turntable. But first, go ahead, stick your face in the immaculate empty room of your freezer, where it's Stoli, period. I'm going to read, this is your two-poem warning. I have no idea where I am, and I always lose track of time, so two more poems. Okay, Jim, thanks. In that case, no. This is a poem called You Wouldn't Do It. You wouldn't do it. In spite of the bed, the creek bed, that is, poured out for us like a new planet, bony and staring, water yet to be discovered. We had yet to be discovered. Small horses escaped. Pooling over us was the homespun sweater of night. Into this I followed. You, who would not slow, turn, do it. Who would not stop abruptly that I might crash land there. We were Capricorns, and so you would not do it, but would instead plunder the night in slow circles. Me following and cautioning, following and cautioning, afraid of the dark and afraid of wasting it. At the mouth of the field, we were fishtailed goats, plodding and slick from all the everything but touching. We were women, and you would not do it, in spite of the clearing before us. I'm going to read a poem from the book called Homeowner. I was a homeowner, and I complained about it for the whole time I did that. And then I thought what I wanted was like a hermetically sealed condo. So I did that, and I complain about that now all the time. So now I'm buying a house three doors down from the one I sold. So this poem will either confirm or I just don't know. This is for me, is what I'm saying. Homeowner. It takes a long time to figure things out, right? The record player, for instance, should have been here with you downstairs in the dining room all along. But it takes 6 months to accept that you don't go upstairs. Shit. 6 months isn't bad, really. It takes 9 years to have 9 years sober, and 3.5 of your 4 years together to kill that dead horse dead. It takes 8 years and $72,000 to pay back $51,000. It will take a long time to live into this house, its baffling porch, the yard of which you are afraid. The inexplicable staircase where, again, you ate Susie Q's for dinner. Robin said, you eat like a 7-year-old whose mother is drunk. It takes less than 1 second to stop arguing with her. It may be that this two-story life isn't for you after all. You buy upstairs scissors and downstairs scissors, upstairs tape and downstairs tape. It may be that abundance is too much. You sleep on the couch to more readily manage intruders and lonesomeness. Your therapist asks, a different therapist, are we allowed to have more than our mothers? It takes a long time to say yes. Thank you.